Something's going on in the woods. Something's going on.
They're not dogs. They're not coyotes. What could it be, right?
I had an encounter with a skunk ape, and it completely altered the course of my life.
I found a skull. I think you guys are going to want to come film this.
Put him out.
Sightings of a UFO hovering over a barn.
Millie woke up from a dream, and when I went into the bedroom, she said there's a monster on the wall.
They saw that the creature had run through a barbed wire fence. They were able to obtain hairs. They sent the hairs to their lab, and it came back as an unknown creature.
What is up, guys, and welcome back to the most bizarre show on the internet. I am the one that they call Shane.
And I'm Oren.
And today, guys, we don't really have too much for news and updates and stuff, but we do have one major piece of news, I guess. I call it news. We are slowly approaching Small Town Monster Fest 2. And for anybody that hasn't heard us talking about it a couple times in the episodes already, we will be vending that. We'll be the full team there at this one. Oren will be there, Jenny will be there, I'll be there, Gabby will be there, which is our significant others, and Jenny obviously was one of the other co-hosts for the show a while back ago. Maybe she'll pop on again at some point, but she's still part of the Bizarre Encounters posse. But that'll be happening June 29th at downtown Canton, Ohio, at the Doubletree by Hilton. And kids 12 and under are free, but for everybody that's over 12, you guys got to go and scoop yourself some tickets. So if you guys want to scoop yourself some tickets and show up to this awesome event, and it was absolutely fantastic last year, then there is a link down in the show description for you guys to go and get tickets. And if you guys are planning on going, let us know. We'd love to be able to hang out with you afterwards. I know that there's probably going to be some form of an after party or something. So, you know, if you're one of our regular listeners and stuff, you want to be able to hang out with you guys after the event, because sometimes it's hard to hang out at the event because we're going to be vending the table and everything. So if you guys are planning on coming out, let us know so we can come and hang out with you, because we, of course, want to meet you guys.
And as always, you guys, don't forget to follow Bizarre Encounters and Open Minds Media on Instagram and Facebook and all that good stuff. And be sure to check us out on YouTube, TikTok, Discord, you know, just all the normal internet things. Y'all know how all that works. And again, don't forget to check out Bizarre Inquiries, the Patreon exclusive mini show, and submit your own inquiries for us to inquire about.
Make sure they're bizarre if you're going to do that.
The bizarrer, the better-er.
Bizarrer, the better-er. I like that. And
if it rolls off the tongue.
Bizarrer. You gotta let it drag on. And if anybody has an encounter to report, no matter how big, no matter how small, I would absolutely love to hear about them. And depending on what you want to do with it, we can either read on the show. If you guys send us an audio recording of you telling us your story, then we can, of course, play that on the show and everything. But if you just simply want somebody to talk to about it, we're always here to talk to you about it. And if you don't want it posted anywhere, that's totally okay, too. And if you're in a state that's somewhat close to us, or you guys live somewhat close to us, then maybe we can even come out and investigate it. But that will never happen unless you guys submit your encounters to OMMEncounterReports@outlook.com. Or go to the link tree, and there is a specific submission form for that. And if you guys want to support the show, a couple different ways to do so. Number one, always being the Patreon. I recently updated those tiers yet again. So there's a bunch of new benefits. Some of the lower tiers get some new additional benefits now. So I think it'll be a lot more user-friendly, and you guys will probably dig it a lot more. And over there, of course, you don't just get Bizarre Encounters. You also get Inquiries of Our Reality and Bizarre Inquiries. So you get three shows for the price of one Patreon, of course. And also exclusive merch store discounts, which are always beneficial. And speaking of the merch store, you guys can always still go and check out the OMM merch store. Got stuff for Bizarre Encounters, Bizarre Inquiries, Inquiries of Our Reality, and a bunch of other designs I was working on that are non-podcast related. I mean, related to the topics that we talk about, of course, but they don't have like the podcast logo or anything like that straight across the chest. And till the end of April, there is a promo code you guys can use for 10% off, which is Cryptid10. But if you guys forget that, it is down in the show notes, so you guys can use it. Same with the link to the store, of course. So make sure you guys take advantage of that while that link is still active. And if anybody is interested in podcast production services, you guys can shoot me a message through Open Minds Media. Whether you just started a podcast, you're thinking about starting a podcast, you already have a podcast, I can help you out no matter what. So shoot me a message and we can figure something out for you guys.
And a big thank you and shout out to our sponsors. I Know Squatch, our buddies Rick and Hans. Check them out for all your squatchy gear needs. And Joe at Cryptoteology, he's always killing it with your wellable cryptid favorites.
Wellable cryptid favorites. That's my favorite part wellable of the intro. I miss Jenny doing that. That shit was so funny. Not in a rude way, of course.
Pop in and do it at some point.
Yes, just no context, man. You just got to have her pop up and just drop that part, walk away. Done with it.
I'll see what I can do.
And of course, guys, don't forget to go and check out Snarly Yow for the fantastic smoky cedar with a hint of mint, beard oil, beard balm, shampoo, and body wash. All natural products, of course. My absolute favorite. I use the beard balm and the beard oil almost every single day, interchanging between the two, of course. And it's one of my favorite parts of the day is putting that stuff in my beard, smelling it in my beard, that minty smell. Absolutely fantastic.
And our buddy Dave, the Snarly Yow, he throws some really great events in the West Virginia area. He let us speak at his Cryptid Halloween event last year. We're planning on being there again this year. So if you're in the area, definitely check him out. He's an awesome dude and puts on some awesome events.
Actually, side piece of news and updates for anybody that hasn't caught it already. We will be there vending this year. We will also be doing a presentation again this year, and we'll also be emceeing this year. So we'll be all around at that event. So you guys, if you're in the West Virginia area, make sure you come out to that because we would absolutely love to see you guys there. And of course, as it gets closer, we'll promote it more in the news and updates in the front of the episode. But going into the other affiliate links, guys, don't forget to go and check out Oregonite. There's a bunch of fantastic pieces that all have to do with spiritual energy, basically taking in the negative energy and putting out positive energy for you. And he makes different custom pieces depending on what exactly you're looking for. He makes some for productivity. He makes some for happiness. He makes a bunch of different ones. Always worth going and checking out. Super cool stuff. At least go and check out the website. See if there's something that you guys like. And if you guys do that, don't forget to use the affiliate link, which we have down in the show notes. And if you guys want 10% off, don't forget to use promo code OMM at checkout. And to all my paranormal investigators out there, don't forget to go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. My absolute favorite device to use. Barry was on the episode last week actually talking about it. So if you guys want some more info on that, you guys can go back and check out last week's episode. And if you guys have any technical questions about it, Barry does run the page. Like we're saying, he's the programmer and developer for the Chattergeist. So he'll be able to answer any of you guys' questions. And he has a bunch of new mods, updates, a bunch of really, really cool stuff coming out for it. So now is definitely the time to scoop yourself a Chattergeist before the price goes up on those boys. I know that he doesn't want to raise the price or anything like that, but hey man, supply and demand. And when you have a fantastic product, it's only a matter of time before the price goes up on it. And if you guys decide to scoop one for yourself, don't forget to use our affiliate link, which is down in the show notes. Goes back towards helping out the show, and we greatly appreciate it. And every single thing that we mentioned is all available down in the show description, in the show notes, off of the link tree. So guys, definitely go and check that out.
All right, so tonight's episode is a deep dive that Shane put together. It's a really interesting topic, something I wasn't really aware of, and it kind of piggybacks a little bit off of the last deep dive we did about the national parks and all that kind of stuff. So Shane, why don't you get into it and tell the listeners what we're going to cover tonight?
So today, guys, we are, I've been doing my whole thing about going all over the world, doing different types of folklore, trying not to just strictly do the American stuff, because I know we have a broad variety of listeners as far as different countries and stuff go. Soon enough, we will be doing something for our awesome Norwegian listener that I talked to him about. Big shout out to his son and everything like that for giving us the idea for the episode, but he knows what it's about, but you guys are going to have to wait to figure out what that one's about. But coming for this week, we're going to be taking it to Russia in the Abkhazia region, and we're going to be talking about the story of Xana of Abkhazia.
Abkhazia.
I'm just going to leave that in because fuck it, why not?
You should say it like that every time.
Abkhazia. It's more fun. It works better that way. I think I'll remember it better if I just say it that way. So, Abkhazia, a small region nestled between the Caucasus Mountains and the Black Sea, has always been a land shrouded in mystery. Rich in cultural diversity and history, this enchanting place holds many secrets waiting to be unraveled. And one of the most captivating stories to emerge from this extraordinary region is the legend of Xana. The expansive mountain range of the Russian-Mongolian wilderness has been said to hide small pockets of wild men dating back centuries. Their features are familiar to most: height at 6 feet or more, thick muscular build covered entirely in reddish-brown hair, an offensive smell, and facial features, which are both human and simian. And just to make a quick comment here before we get too heavy into this, one thing that I found pretty fucking fascinating as far as Russia goes is that in the U.S., Bigfoot is more of like a folklore thing. It's not taken very seriously by a lot of colleges, you know, like big institutions. But in Russia, they actually teach classes specifically for this, and they actually like take it into consideration as it actually being a real thing because it's so dated back in their folklore. So they actually have like college professors that strictly teach on this and the probability of this and all of the encounters of this. So like the whole phenomenon is looked at completely differently in Russia. Like they look at it as a legitimate thing rather than like a folklore story.
So you can go be like a Bigfootologist.
Fuck yeah. In Russia. I don't know. There's a different name that they call Bigfoots in Russia, and I'm slipping my mind right now, but whatever that word is, ologist, but translated into Russian, as I'm sure ologist is probably a different word in Russian too.
Well, I mean, if we know anything about the Russians, it's that they have everything figured out, so.
That is true. And if you don't got it figured out, you're just going to get sent to Siberia. Like, bleh.
Send you to a work camp or something?
Yeah, you can go live in the work camps in Siberia. Which is supposed to be one of the worst regions to live in the entire world as far as coldness goes. Like, I'm pretty sure that that's probably the farthest north that there's, or probably south, that there's, like, legitimate housing families living there. Because, of course, you have, like the labs and stuff like that they have in Antarctica and everything, which aren't necessarily intended to be, like, a place that somebody lives their entire life. But Siberia, I'm pretty sure, is supposed to be, like, the coldest place that actually has, like, a set population of people that live there. And it's supposed to be...
Is it worse than Michigan?
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. I've watched videos about it, dude.
No way. There's no way.
They put these carpet-looking things on the grills of their cars because shit will just freeze. And I was watching this video of some dude that was, like, eating some noodles, and he walked outside, and he was, like, holding the chopsticks and then let go. And it all froze where, like, the chopsticks for, like, the ramen noodles were, like, still stuck up in the air. Like, it's that damn cold there. All the time. It's like, you can't get away from it. There's no seasons. It's just cold as shit.
Cold and colder.
Yeah, pretty much. You get the cold season and then you get the colder season. That's pretty much sums up Siberia. In Siberia, the cold is you.
Abkhazia.
Okay, back into Abkhazia.
We're going off the fucking rails already.
Yeah, it's too early for that. We're only two paragraphs in. In communities from North America all the way to exotic Eastern locations, mothers have warned their children not to play in the forest at night, lest the Sasquatch or Bigfoot creature might snatch them away. Yet, while most mainstream Western scientists do not acknowledge them, these ape men, or Alamasti, there's the word, as they are called in Russia, nevertheless seem to exist at the fringe of civilization. So, Almastia, A-L-M-A-S-T-Y, Almasti? I think it's Almasti. That probably sounds a little bit more right.
That's what it looks like to me.
So there's the word. Sorry, guys, that I didn't know that a few minutes earlier. But there you go. There's the word. Look it up. Countless images of these creatures can be found on the internet and YouTube. The Patterson-Gimlin film of the 1960s is probably the most infamous, featuring a heavy-breasted Bigfoot-type creature striding into the forestry. But a merchant in the 19th century Russia may have come across something even more profound.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Xana was an alleged wild woman who lived in the remote forest of Abkhazia during the late 19th century. That does help if I just say it all weird like that.
And it's funnier.
Described as an ape-like creature, she possessed incredible strength and agility, and her untamed appearance struck fear into the hearts of the local villagers. Over the years, numerous accounts of her encounters with people of Abkhazia have left us questioning the nature of this mysterious being. According to local legend, Xana was not a mere beast, but an elusive human-like creature. Some believe she may have been the offspring of a wild woman captured as a slave and a local Abkhazian man. This theory suggests that Xana was a hybrid being caught between the human and animal realms. which seems to kind of have somewhat of the same kind of trope that most people kind of throw in as far as like the whole Nephilim theory goes in with the ape men, that there's the human DNA mixed with something else.
I have that written down in my own notes.
See, this is why we do a especially show together. Like we both think the same.
Yeah, the reddish-brown hair and like even the offensive smell. I've just recently learned that that's something that's kind of been associated with the Nephilim. So, yeah,
definitely. I mean, fuck, there's some weird-ass creatures, and they eat humans, supposedly. So, of course, if something's cannibalistic, it's probably going to have a foul odor involved with it, because if you're smelt a decaying body, it's pretty fucking nasty. I don't know about a human body. I've never smelt a decaying human body, but I've seen and smelt enough decaying animals.
Can't be that different.
Yeah, I assume it's probably along the same lines, if not way worse, just because of the food that we intake. Because you are what you eat, and humans eat a lot of processed, really gross shit. So I assume that smell be a lot worse. Because, like, human sweat versus dog sweat, I think human sweat's a lot worse. Ajit Jinaba, a well-known nobleman and seafarer, may have come across and captured a wild woman, or a wild female, Almasty. In the 1870s, the frozen wilderness between Georgia and Russia was home to what could have been the greatest anthropological discovery of all time. Small villages in the area whispered about prehistoric ape women living in the forest. Merchant Jinaba, a frequent traveler in the region, heard the stories about this wild Almasty and was determined to find the creature for himself. Jinaba hired a posse to help him score the area of Uchindir.
Sounds good to me.
And rumor soon gave way to reality. Against all odds, his men apprehended the female Almasty and turned her into a prisoner in the frost-dusted Caucasus Mountains. Immediately, the poor creature was a sensation. This Almasty looked human, but at the same time, it was clear that she was not. Unsurprisingly, the Almasty did not take kindly to having been fished out of the security of her wilderness, but Jinaba realized how valuable his specimen was. He had no intention of letting her escape, and implemented stringent measures to protect his trophy. In true colonial, brutish fashion, Jinaba's men and local residents were able to force the wild woman into a spike-lined ditch they constructed. Sadly, this would mark the beginning of a long life of indignity and suffering for Zanna. Jinaba, enamored with his catch, christened the wild woman Zanna. Regardless of who or what her people and ancestors were, Zanna was likely a bright, intelligent young woman. She would have been horrified to be turned into a spectacle, but Merchant Jinaba could not see past the novelty parading Zanna into this world. After paying the locals a hefty price for her, he brought Zanna to his home estate in shackles. She would not be afforded the luxury of a comfortable, humane place to sleep. Jinaba had her confined in a crude cage where Zanna dug a hole to serve as her bed. There, she would stay for 3 long years, rambunctious crowds glamoring to gawk at her. Zanna's unique features rapidly earned her celebrity status. No one had seen anything like her. She was 6.5 feet tall, with black skin, coated entirely in thick auburn hair. Zanna had even more muscles than the strongest men. Her sheer strength was legendary, and she did not seem to be affected by the frigid winter air, even though she was forced to sleep outdoors. Eventually, Jinaba's attitude towards her softened. He decided to retire Zanna's cage and tether her to a fenced enclosure. Zanna's temperament proved to be gentle and obedient, so much so that the merchant went on to relinquish the tether as well. But rather than run at the first opportunity, Zanna stayed. She seemed to have grown comfortable in her captivity and was never seen traveling far from her food source. Slowly, the people on Jinaba's estate tried to initiate the process of taming. Zanna was given clothes, but she would not wear them. She preferred instead to walk about naked and shredded every dress that was brought to her into pieces. Zanna was also introduced to language, but lessons proved fruitless. Although she knew she could respond to her name, she never uttered a single word. Which sounds kind of messed up. Obviously, there's the whole aspect that she's covered in hair, which kind of leads credence to the whole, like, Sasquatch idea. But if you get into kind of, like, the theory we talked about a while ago about the whole thing with hogs, for example, that you take a pig, you put it out in the woods, and it'll start developing hair and everything, and it'll turn into a wild hog, essentially. So, like, who's to say that it may not be somewhat the same for people? And the reason she doesn't talk was maybe because, I mean, this was obviously in the 1800s, and we were talking about this on a couple of episodes back with the National Park episode, the mm-hmm. whole thing about not having an understanding of mental illness or mental disabilities. So, again, there's still the hair factor, but her not talking kind of leads credence into the fact that there is probably a possibility that she may have been some form of a person who maybe had that hair growth disease that you usually see in South America that just had like a mental illness or something. Because even on the other side of that, not to get too stereotypical, but depending on what the mental illness is or mental disability is, there is the idea that certain mental disabilities, they result in them having more strength. I'm trying to find like a nice way of saying this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's definitely a possibility. It just seems to me like when you factor in her size to start off with, and then the hair, and you know, just all the different features. And we're going to get into this probably a little bit more in some of the notes later, some of the things we're going to talk about. But I almost wonder if, you know, she was some sort of prototype human who was, you know, very close to human, and these little pockets of these things continued to exist far longer than, you know, prehistory would dictate. And, you know, it seems to me like Siberia, Russia, Abkhazia.
Like
that would be a great place for one of these small pockets of things to exist. You know, I kind of think that dinosaurs lasted a whole lot longer than people tend to think. And that could explain everything from, you know, Loch Ness Monster and other sea monsters and things like that. And, you know, even
dragons in medieval times.
That's what I was going to say. In Middle Ages, I mean, they're talking about dragons. So, I mean, it seems quite logical to me that this Xana creature, entity, individual, whatever you want to call her, was some sort of, you know, very close relative of humans that just was able to survive in this wilderness in some small pocket. So that's kind of, I'm jumping a little bit ahead to my thoughts and theories, but that's kind of where I go with it.
I mean, I was even going to mention the fact that, like, look at Russia/Siberia, just that region in general. One, it's extremely mountainous, so populations are in pockets, more so in the, like, U.S., it's kind of spread out where there's stuff in between, but it's spread throughout the country, where I feel like in, like, Russia, for example, it's probably in the lower areas that's where most of the civilizations are, and then the northern areas get into just, like, miles and miles and miles and miles of just straight wilderness. So kind of like what you were saying, I think that there's a lot more of a probability of these things existing there, because there's probably still some regions within Russia that probably people have never even really stepped foot for over a couple thousand years to this point now. And stuff like this, like a legitimate capture story, is why in Russia, this type of stuff isn't folklore. Like, it's legitimate. They have, they have physical evidence of this stuff. Like, there's even a picture of her that you can find online. And I don't know if it was something that was created later on because there wasn't a physical picture or not, but I mean, there might even actually be, like, physical pictures of Xana out there. And obviously there was villagers, a bunch of people that came to see it. And it wasn't just like that typical, like, Minnesota Iceman concept that it's like, here's a Sasquatch side of an ice block. Like, this was actually like a living, breathing, moving creature that you could actually interact with.
I mean, what the whole story reminds me of a lot, and I should have looked up the details. I'm going to butcher this, but you're going to know what I'm talking about. It's like somewhere in the jungle, there's like supposedly this lake with this village, like, through the jungle, and like a dinosaur type creature lives there. It's like,
I forgot what the name of the area is called, but I know what you're talking about. It's where they have that really big flat elevation that they actually, that area that they go to and up is supposed to be that.
Yeah. And there's been like several, like, legitimate expeditions to go and find this thing. And I'm blanking on the name, but like, same type deal. Like, this creature is a part of that region's folklore, or like, not even folklore. Like, they talk about this thing like it's real, you know? So that story kept popping into my head as I was reading these notes. And again, small isolated pocket in the wilderness, who knows what's living there or survived there for God knows how long.
Say this, this story is very reminiscent of, it was a long time ago. I don't know if you remember it, but it was, when we were still doing bite-sized bizarrities. where there was that ape man creature that they had found in, I think it was Japan, and they actually sent a hunter to go out and kill this thing, and then they brought it into the town, and it was like in like the 1600s, so it kind of just got lost and decayed through time, but there was like another physical evidence of like an ape man, that it wasn't just like a folkloric story. It was like this whole village was like, yes, we hired a hunter to go out and kill this thing, and he actually brought it back. Like, we had physical evidence of this thing. But that's kind of the problem, is that it's like, there's so much of this physical evidence, supposedly, that's in the past, but we haven't gotten anything recently. And the reason for that being is either, one, maybe these things have gone partly extinct, where they are living in ridiculously small pockets now, or two, like, maybe they're all gone altogether, and we're kind of just chasing something around the woods that we kind of just want to believe that they're still there. Or three, everybody talks about the whole idea of a Sasquatch, that they just will like walk and disappear and the footsteps will just disappear. Maybe the reasoning behind that isn't because they're interdimensional, but because these things were animals that existed at that point. We hunted them into extinction. And now what we have is the idea of Sasquatch, as weird as it sounds, is like the ghostly version of these things, which are why like the footprints and everything stop.
Yeah, I've heard that theory before. Like the whole Sasquatch is actually a ghost of a wild man, but so we're not just half-assing this. I found the thing that we were talking about.
Perfect.
It's the Molekle Mbembe.
That's it. Yep.
And via the Wikipedias, in several
good old Wikipedia.
Bantu, in several Bantu mythologies, Molekle Mbembe is a mythical, quote-unquote, I added those, water-dwelling entity that is believed to exist in the Congo River Basin. Variously described as a living creature or a spirit, Molekle Mbembe's descriptions vary widely based on conflicting purported eyewitness reports, but is often described as a large quadrupedal herbivore with smooth skin, a long neck, and a single tooth or horn, much like the extinct species of sauropods. So there you go.
Well, maybe we can hit that one in the future, but as for now, you guys got a little extra bonus episode within the episode.
There you go.
Still more interesting was what Xana could do with her physical prowess. She was said to be able to swim effortlessly against the high tide of a nearby river and could even run faster than a horse at full gallop. That's fucking fast.
Yeah, see, like, that kind of stuff leads me to believe that this was not just some human that had, you know, kind of developed whatever hair.
It leads credence into the legitimate Sasquatch.
Yeah, yeah, this is something other than a human as we know it, it seems like to me.
So even if you get into the whole theory about it being, again, the whole reminiscent, like, there was different sections of human-like beings that were all existing at one point, and then they all fought and only one came out superior on top, but that still doesn't mean that there might not be little pockets of these things existing. And I know that falls into other people's exactly. Sasquatch theories, but just this story in general kind of lends credence more so into that theory.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there like a whole lot of academic research about like possibly what proto-humans came before Homo sapiens or whatever, and like interbreeding and whatnot, which might get into maybe something we're going to talk about here in a little bit.
Yeah. 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 You're right. Yeah. I guess we'll leave that till we hop back into that part, because I'm sure it'll come up here pretty soon. Humanity is notorious for its cruelty. In years past, even the most intelligent scholars, scientists, and anthropologists have been guilty of perpetuating injustices against marginalized people or cultures deemed inferior to Western norm. Xana was unlucky enough to have been the recipient of such treatment. When she wasn't working, community leaders had taught her to do simple chores, like grinding corn or lifting heavy sacks of grain. Xana was actually provided with alcohol, likely out of Cullis' curiosity to see how the liquid intoxicant would affect her, which it's kind of messed up. That's kind of like the equivalent of those people that like get their dogs drunk. It's just like certain species just aren't intended to get drunk like that.
Well, if this thing was so big and strong, I mean, I wouldn't want to get it drunk. That seems like you're just playing with fire at that point.
And I mean, how much would you have to give this thing? Because I mean, like, what's that guy? Andre the Giant. That dude would have to drink like a keg to get like drunk.
Yeah.
So like, are they giving her like a whole fucking barrel of mead? Like, here, have fun. And
that motherfucker couldn't swim up a stream or race a horse. So I mean,
yeah, you can't outrun this thing. Like, she gets pissed off.
He couldn't even beat Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 3. So
I mean, Xana, though, you don't know if she's a happy drunk. You don't know if she's a mad drunk, bro. But if she ends up being a mad drunk or an aggressive drunk, and she can outrun a fucking horse, that's like your fastest means of transportation at this time. So, like, what are you going to do if she's chasing behind a horse? That's like the equivalent of like that fear that you'd get with like Mothman flying next to your damn car. It's just like, how is this thing moving this fast?
Yeah, I think this might be worse. Hey, if we do the cryptid brawl tournament again, we're putting Xana in there next year.
She's marked. She's going down for the October episode that we do. And Xana's going to take it home. Well, actually,
as long as she has the devil on her side.
666 rolls, man. Always remember. And I mean, shit, speaking of that, we could even do one where we do a local folklore edition of it.
Yeah.
And this would be perfect for that. So if anybody's interested in us doing our cryptid brawl tournament style game with folklore, let us know, because we can definitely do that.
Yeah, like folklore, urban legends, maybe we could do that next March for the tournament.
Because we definitely already have one planned for October, as far as us probably doing something that has to do with like creepy paranormal stuff. Maybe we'll even add some like scary movie characters in it, some ghostly figures. Like, I know I keep saying like the ghost of like Lizzie Borden, for example, but we got that one planned. That's going to be all the creepy stuff. So on the next run after that, maybe we'll run Xana.
There you go.
Xana soon became alcohol dependent. While she was impaired, the unthinkable happened. Men from a nearby village took advantage of her condition and assaulted her. This would lead to Xana actually becoming pregnant. So, who's just like, who wants it? Who would want to do that, man? I mean, I know there's people out here that are like having sexual relations with their farm animals, but like, what's wrong with people, man? Like, what the fuck?
I mean, I get there's not a lot to do in Siberia, but I don't think I've ever been that bored.
I can't even fathom that, because obviously it's assault, so it's not going to be something.
Get the wild woman drunk and fuck her?
Yeah.
Let's just go ahead and say it.
I mean, they label it as an assault, so assumably it wasn't something that she wanted. So if she was that strong, could outrun a horse, all of that, how many people had to be involved with this? That's another good question.
You raise more questions than you answer.
I have a lot of moral questions involving this part, but I guess we'll skip past that.
A lot of logistical questions. I mean, the morality, that speaks for itself. I just want to know how these fuckers pulled this off.
How? She's so hairy. How the hell do you find it?
you took it a step further, but I mean,
we have to get off the rails at least a little bit. That's our off the rails for the episode. And guys,
that's what she said.
Anyways, getting back in past that, because we can't make too many jokes out of that, because that's a little fucked up on our end. But anyways, after delivering her first newborn, Xana carried it to the river and dipped it into the ice cold waters to bathe it. The newborn, having taken after his father, lacking the thick protective fur of its mother, did not survive the washing, which, as fucked up as that sounds, considering that it's like a bastard of two different species, probably the best thing that could have happened.
Yeah.
Cause
yeah, I was trying to think of something snappy and witty, but I had nothing.
It's kind of a hard thing to be too witty about, because it's kind of, this is the kind of fucked up part of the story. Sorry, everybody. Yeah. Xana fell pregnant yet again and took her second child to the river for the same wash. When this child passed away as well, a small faction of mothers and grandmothers from the community gathered to discuss what could be done. It was eventually decided that if Xana had any more children, they were to be taken away immediately to be afforded a chance of living. But my conclusion to what could be done is stop letting the men have alone time with her, and then the problem won't persist anymore. You won't have a problem, because clearly...
Yeah, this is like kind of victim blaming, isn't it? I mean, what was Xana wearing at the time?
But it's like, you actually have people that sat down, gathered to discuss what could be done about this problem, and their best solution was, we'll just take the baby from her. It wasn't like, again, maybe if people just stop fucking touching her. Like, just stop it.
Hey, y'all, quit fucking the wild woman, like, never crossed their minds.
Y'all got wives at home, y'all got livestock at home. Like, fuck that stuff. Stop fucking the wild woman. I would rather you fuck your sheep than this wild woman, because clearly something will result from it. If you fuck your sheep, nothing's resulting. So, like, whatever. If you're going to be immoral, at least be immoral to a point where another consciousness or living thing won't become of it and be affected of being a result of your fucked up actions.
Well, and again, just like logistically, like a sheep isn't going to like fucking rip your throat out like you're in Roadhouse or anything. Like, I mean, I just don't understand anything about this.
I mean, in all fairness, if she got pregnant once, she got pregnant twice, and we'll talk about if anything else happens again. I mean, at a certain point, I mean, it's either the one thing where it's like Stockholm syndrome, where she just assumed that this was a normal part of life and just became accepting of it, or two, at a certain point, maybe she did not have a problem with it, but I'm going to assume that it was still forced and assault, and it was like a Stockholm syndrome thing, which leads into a lot of the other downhill spiral that we're about to get into here. Shamelessly, Zanna continued to drink and be abused. She would go on to have 4 more children, all similarly removed from her care. And again, you can't keep your dick in your pants? 4 fucking kids? Well, 6 altogether? Like, are you kidding me right now?
I want to know if this was like all the same dude, or if it was like multiple. If it was just like some pervert that lived in the village, that almost makes more sense than there just being widespread wild men fuckers, you know?
I mean, that's still an easy solution if it's only one guy. You just have like one guy from the town that just stands next to her with like a stick. And whenever the guy comes up and starts trying to do something, you just smack him on the head and say, "No, stop it. Treat this guy like a fucking dog," because that's what he's acting like.
Or just cut off his pee-pee or something. I mean, there were options.
I mean, it is Russia. I mean, I don't know what stuff was like back then, but I know that Russia has had a lot of its hardships through the years. So, I mean, I don't feel like it'd be past the people in charge to take that into consideration as something to do, to just remove somebody's phallus altogether.
I mean, by child number 4, I mean, desperate times and desperate measures and all that sort of thing.
And again, I can't say it enough. Just stop it. Stop it.
I'm going to say again, we don't know what she was wearing at the time.
So. At this point, man, if you're that fucking desperate, why don't you just go take some of your fruit, you know, warm it up a little bit, cut a little hole in the side of it. Go
They're
fuck that.
They're in Siberia. They can't warm shit up.
They still got fireplaces, though. At least you don't have to worry about it totally burning it, you know, because the fire might partly freeze.
I don't know. You're the cold weather subject matter expert.
Only for Michigan. And we don't even get that anymore. It's fucking warm here all the time. Even the winter, we got like 4 snowfalls. And there weren't even good ones.
People in Michigan don't fuck wild women that they found out on the tundra?
No. We just fuck each other in the cold. Okay. That's how we get our body heat, and that's how we get warmth.
Okay. Good to know.
That's why our population is so dense here. Everybody just has nothing to do during the winter months, but do it. It's all those warm fireplaces and blankets, man. Like, it's a perfect setup, and you just can't help yourself when you're in that situation, man.
Well, that explains how Orson and October got here.
You ain't wrong, except I don't have a fireplace. So, minus the fireplace. It's just about the body heat, man.
This has just gone full off the rails. We hadn't had one this unhinged in a long time.
The last one was Black Shuck. That was the last crazy unhinged one.
Yeah, that one was pretty unhinged. We might be topping the Black Shuck with this one.
Unhingeometer. We'll just call it that.
Yeah, this is a solid like 7.5, 8 on the unhinged meter.
Oh, here, jumping back into actually something that I talked about earlier. Aside from 2 rare photographs of a daughter and her son named Kiewit, not much is known about Zanna's children, except that they had uncommon strength. They were said to have lived uneventful lives, and none were born with Zanna's distinct body hair. They worked, cooked, cleaned, and would go on to have children of their own. Some of Zanna's descendants are said to be living to this day. So them motherfuckers got Sasquatch blood.
Or Nephilim blood.
Ooh. Wouldn't that be Elohim or something like that? There's like a descendant. There's a name for the offspring of the Nephilim.
Yeah, like the Elohim or, yeah, something like
I think
that.
That's what it is.
I do not claim to be a Nephilim expert.
Neither do I, but I've heard the terms enough times that they're in the back of my head jumbled around somewhere. They're in the file cabinet. I just got to find the right file. In about 1890, Zanna died. She had been living in captivity, drunk and childless, for almost 20 years. Really sad story. Zanna's story has fascinated people for more than 100 years. In 2013, a professor, Brian Sykes, was able to conduct tests on saliva samples said to be from six of Xana's descendants. Sykes, a professor of human genetics at the University of Oxford, claimed that his research yielded evidence that Xana's ethnic background was 100% sub-Saharan African, and that she was likely a slave that had been brought to the area by the ruling Ottomans of the time. Sykes also had a chance...
I'm going to jump in right there, if you don't mind. So
you hitting the bullshit meter too?
Yeah, because I mean, they say that like all of humanity is descended from, you know, one female that came out of Africa. So if this is some, you know, really close to human, proto-human specimen that just survived all these years, it kind of makes sense to me that it would kind of share those same DNA traits. And again, I know nothing about any of this kind of shit, but that just doesn't seem like a smoking gun to me.
I was going to say, at least if you're looking from your logic, it makes a little bit more sense that they, you know, because usually with like the Sasquatch stuff, it usually has human female genetics and then the male is unknown. But that doesn't explain the whole strength aspect. So it's just like, I mean, yeah, maybe that explains the mother side, same as with a lot of the Sasquatch stuff, but it still doesn't explain the father side, which is assumably where all of the weird adaptations probably came from.
Yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned it earlier that someone suggested that this was some kind of hybrid type creature, and that seems to make sense to me. I mean, based off the fact that it was obviously close enough to humans to mate with humans, but there's enough stuff going on that's clearly not human with this, you know?
Yeah, there's either one, again, it's some other sub-variation type of human, or it's something that's a totally different species, but somehow still compatible with humans. Almost like the whole idea of like a donkey, or a horse and a donkey make a mule. Or wait, am I mixing that up? A mule and a donkey? Or a mule and a horse?
I don't know the...
Whatever one it is, but then after that, they're not able to breed past that, so you can't like reproduce past that, so you still would have had like a stop to that. But yeah, I'm just going off on a rant anyways. Sykes also had a chance to study the unearthed skull of Kiewit, Xana's son, and was astonished to see its unusual features, mainly eye sockets much larger than a human's, as well as a prominent brow ridge. The back of Kiewit's skull had another strange mark, the presence of an extra bone at its base.
So the eye socket thing, to me, that sounds a lot like the whole elongated skulls and how they say that they have larger eye sockets. And I don't know if you uncovered anything about like the sutures on this skull or anything, but that's just what came to mind when I read this part of the notes.
Talk about weird timing for this. I just had L.A. Marzulli on Inquiries of All Reality, and he has...
That was a good episode. I listened to it.
Well, thank you. But he like physically had an elongated skull, and he connects that with the Nephilim stuff. So again, kind of full circle around here that it still partly connects in with the possible Nephilim idea.
Absolutely.
And even if you're not necessarily looking at that as a fully biblical idea, think about it this way. There may have been other species that existed here, and those are the ones that we're referring to as the angels, maybe a really advanced race, something like that. And they may have mixed with the humans that were here that were more primal, and then that's maybe another way of possibly looking at the whole Nephilim thing. If you're not necessarily a biblical person, you still have to take into consideration the possibility of there being civilizations that existed before us that could have had children with the more primal civilizations that were coming up, or the whole extraterrestrial, not from this world aspect, that what people perceive as angels might actually be these like light beings that like Bledsoe talks about, for example. They might different names for the same thing, you know? Or our generation looks at them like aliens, but the previous generations looked at them like angels, and both are technically right. It's just different perspectives of the same thing.
Yeah, I think we've kind of talked about this on the show before, but kind of piggybacking off of that, just taking the spirituality or religious aspects out of the biblical account of this, basically every culture around the world, their creation stories are the same. There's some, you know, otherworldly faction that comes down and mixes part of themselves with some sort of faction that was already here, and we get humanity as we know it. So, I mean, this is like right in line with all that kind of thinking. And it, I mean, even like Anunnaki type stuff, you know?
And I mean, looking at even just this story in general, man, like it seems like things like to try to reproduce with other things that they're not necessarily intended to. Cause like, I know that there's probably a lot of humans, man, that if extraterrestrials, aliens got revealed tomorrow, they're probably going to try to fuck them.
Well, and that's what I would have said about the whole, you know, sons of God lying with the daughters of man thing. Like, you know, I'm of the opinion that they're talking about extraterrestrial. What we call angels in the Bible, I think we're extraterrestrials. But it makes perfect sense to me. Hey, if we are made after the image of these things, you're like, Junior, quit fucking the earth, women. Like, that just makes perfect sense to me, you know? Like, we got to wipe all y'all out because y'all keep fucking the earth, women.
Because, like I said, it wouldn't be any different with humans now, man. If we found a more advanced civilization, of course, we're probably not going to have any luck there. But if we found a less advanced civilization on another planet, guarantee you, man, there's going to be people trying to fuck them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if genetics work out properly, then they might just create an offspring off some weird chance, you know? And then it just kind of transcends from there.
Yeah, this is history repeating itself.
Yep. Although Sykes proposed that Xana might have been a slave of African descent, there was a number of factors that make this idea less plausible. The first is that while Xana's DNA supposedly indicated 100% African origin, Sykes was unable to clarify which region on the continent Xana's ancestors could have came from. The most obvious factor was that nothing about Xana's description or behavior was even like that of an ordinary human being. At 6.5 feet tall, it would be possible to squeeze Xana into the human category. Her full covering of auburn hair doesn't exclude this possibility either. It could be theorized that Xana suffered from a condition called hypertrichosis, in which people are born with increased body hair on the face, back, and limbs. And that was the one I was talking about previously in the episode. That's a common, not common, but it's seen mainly in South America for whatever reason. It's just something that maybe they still kind of hold on to genetically. Maybe it's something that's a remnant from when people were needed to have more hair possibly. But if you look it up, there's a lot of cases in South America of that, because just something with their genetics that they just hold on to it, or it's a repressed gene or something. But how would that explain Xana's sheer strength? No human that we know of can outrun a stallion or swim so effortlessly against the current of a raging river. Even if we suppose that Xana was very talented, it is reasonable to think that she could have also survived outside in the wintertime, without clothes. As a mere human, Xana seemed content to sleep in a simple hole in the ground. The frigid weather did not affect her. If Xana was human, these things would have been impossible. So again, that adds into there's some other type of DNA mixed in here. And even if it's some type of ancient human DNA, I mean, I feel like that's definitely plausible, because, I mean, when people were living in caves, I mean, yeah, we had the discovery of fire and stuff, but assumably humans at one point were a lot more weather hardened than we are now, where like, if you take like a prehistoric man and just put him in the middle of like Siberia with a modern day human, I guarantee you that prehistoric man is probably going to have a lot less awful of a time than that modern day human's going to have.
Not if the modern day human starts fucking him.
That's true. And then they'll just create a new baby that'll be half fucked and half good.
As long as they don't wash it in the river.
Yeah, just don't wash it in the river.
Yeah, then you're good to go.
But that also shows something else too, that assumably maybe this is somewhat of a different species, because when you dive into some of these like motherly intuition aspects of things, clearly that was something that she naturally wanted to do. So assumably one of her natural offspring wouldn't have had a problem with that. Otherwise, these things wouldn't have lived. They would have died after the first generation, because they wouldn't have been able to reproduce, because they would have killed every baby. So if it was 100% whatever she was, it would have been able to withstand that, which again shows that there should have been somewhat of a breeding population of these things if there was enough of them around that it inherently as a mother wanted to do this every single time it had a baby. Like there's something in its genetics that was telling it to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Additionally, an enslaved woman would have had at least some vestige of human language. Even if she'd been living on her own in the wilderness for a very long time, she also might have had the tattered remains of human clothing. But even if she were found naked, why wouldn't she have gratefully embraced the fresh dresses that she was given after so much time alone? And she didn't just reject them. She tore them into pieces, which, again, going into that primal thing, like trying to go put a fucking shirt on a dog, bro. They fucking hate that shit. We're like the only species on the entire planet that's just like, hell yeah, clothes, man.
Yeah, let's put them on the dog.
Except for those little dogs. Those little dogs love that shit. But I feel like those little dogs are just holding in a lot of anger.
Dogs.
They're just, fuck. That's the facial expression those little dogs have all the time.
Just balls of flesh.
Pretty much. Little fucking hamsters. What about the disaster with Xana's first few children? No new mother takes her newborn naked to an icy river for a bath, especially in the Caucasus Mountains. This would have only made sense if Xana's people were very, very different, or perhaps not people as we know them at all. If Xana really was an Elemasti, then bathing her babies in the river would have made sense. Elemasti babies would have had both fur and different physiology, enabling them to survive a plunge in the frigid water, which is exactly what I was just talking about.
Yeah.
Yet Xana was able to endure sex with lascivious men and bore at least 6 children. If she were not a human being, then reproducing with men should not have been possible at all. At the very least, any offspring she had would have been sterile. But her surviving offspring went to have children of their own. Could Xana really have been an Elemasti, a member of a surviving remnant of ancient people still living as they did more than 40,000 years ago? And again, that shows what I was kind of saying about the whole, like, I don't remember if it's I think it's a donkey. But you take a mule and a horse and it makes a donkey, and then they can't reproduce past that. Exactly what I was saying. It wouldn't have worked, man. Like, there's something to this, man. The answer, along with Xana, has been buried in the annals of history. However, her legend serves as a reminder of the untapped mysteries that exist within our world and the importance of keeping an eye open mind while exploring the unknown. And that concludes our journey into the fascinating world of Xana, the wild woman of Abkhazia. I hope you guys enjoyed this deep dive into the legend and the questions it arises. Until next time, keep seeking knowledge and embrace the wonder that surrounds us all. Had to be, what's the word I'm looking for? Theatrical at the end there.
Yeah, that was quite theatrical.
So, any thoughts, any ideas on this, man?
No, I kind of think I hit them as we were going along. I guess just kind of my, cut and dry one sentence takeaway from this is, I mean, I think this thing, like I said, probably was some sort of hybrid creature between a proto-human and maybe an actual human, and was, close enough that human beings could mate with it. But yeah, who knows what strange things live in these small pockets in the wilderness that people don't ever go to. So that's kind of where I land on it. What about you?
I mean, if there was ever a legitimate Sasquatch story, I definitely think this is it. And whatever people are associating as Sasquatch, I think that this was like the one opportunity in civilization that we know of that we actually legitimately had one. And unfortunately, it got lost through time, where back then it was more of like a sideshow act, yeah, more than like an actual thing of research. But like, if we found this nowadays, dude, like, this could have essentially proven the existence of Sasquatch. But now, just because it's an old story and not, there's not really any much evidence you can really do much with it, it just remains a story, unfortunately. But like, this could have been the proof if this would have happened modern day.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And, maybe this happened long enough ago that there were still more of these things around, and maybe the Sasquatch population is much smaller now. Hell, I don't know. I kind of tend to go with the interdimensional kind of more woo-woo side of things. But, more than one thing can be true at the same time. There could have been Sasquatches that came here through portals or whatever and got stranded and, had families, and this Xana creature could have been something like that,
See, and that's kind of rises another question of mine too. It's like, so Sasquatch, obviously there probably was a lot of these things around at one point, and they're assumably like on the decline unless they're just really elusive and just really, really good hiders. So like, as much fun as it is to dive into all this stuff, like, how long do we realistically have to actually be able to prove this stuff before they actually become completely extinct? Because, like, I know a lot of Sasquatch...
Like flesh and blood creatures.
Exactly. Like, I know a lot of Sasquatch reports come in, and I'm not just trying to discredit anybody's story, but let's just say out of 10 stories, 5 of those were people that just made them up for the sake of having a Sasquatch story. So it's like, the number of Sasquatches that we think may exist because of encounters assumably isn't correct at all, because you have to take into consideration people just wanting to have their own Sasquatch story and throwing it in. I know that there's people out there that have had legitimate encounters, but it's hard to actually guess what the number might actually be of these things, just because of how many false reports, I guarantee you, are all over the place.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even like 2 weeks ago, I had a family member that lives up north actually send me a Bigfoot footprint that was being sent around like their local community thing. I saw it 1 second, and I'm like, this is fake. So it's just like stuff like that, man. The whole community believes and wants to believe, so the whole community is going to believe. But all it takes is one person that like knows what to look for to say like this is bullshit, and then it's like, are there any in that area, or is it just people want to believe in them so bad in that area that they're creating fake footprints? Because The picture I got sent was a Sasquatch footprint in mud, but the footprint only went down maybe like a quarter of an inch, and there wasn't any like depth to it. It was clearly like a flat plate footprint,
so
you know?
It was done with like a piece of plywood or something like that.
Yeah, no mid-tarsal break, no definition to the toes, nothing. Just flat in mud, quarter inch down. So it's just it's fake. Like, there's no questions about it.
Yeah, and kind of like how we talk about with UFO sightings and things like that. I mean, yeah, there's always going to be the hoaxers and the people who are just, you know, trying to make a quick buck and things like that, but I think the vast majority of people who, you know, report these sort of things, Sasquatch, UFOs, whatever you want to talk about, I think they at least believe, you know, what they're saying. And, you know, if 1% of those stories ends up being real, that's a lot of unexplainable things out there. And like you said, this might have been our best chance to finally get some kind of concrete answers. And, you know, cryptozoology and weirdos like us just wasn't a thing back then, really. So, you know, that opportunity's kind of gone now, and who knows if we're ever going to get an opportunity this good again. So it's kind of unfortunate in that way, but kind of keeps the mystery alive, I guess.
That's what I was going to say. The mystery's fun. It's like, as much as I want to prove the existence, I just like diving into the stuff and creating theories. Like, I definitely want it to be proven one day, but at the same time, I like creating stories and mysteries and theories and everything like that about it. And I mean, we'll probably cover it on a future episode, because I definitely want to come around to it. But the whole Minnesota Iceman thing, there was the original Minnesota Iceman that a lot of people theorize was legitimate. It was an actual Sasquatch frozen in a piece of ice. And then there was some government intervention, some weird stuff that happened. And then there was people say that there was another one that went around, and then that was the fake one. So it's like, there may be theoretically that original Minnesota Iceman locked up somewhere. So
in the basement of the Smithsonian,
man, along with all those giant bones. So I know everybody wants to raid Area 51. Like, that was the thing for a minute, but bro, when are we going to raid the fucking Smithsonian, man? Like, we need to organize this shit. I'm just kidding. I can't say that, because otherwise, you know, you're going to have people coming after me after there's a group of people standing outside of the Smithsonian like, let me see the giant bones,
man,
but
why couldn't those Storm the Capitol motherfuckers have done that? Just storm the Smithsonian. I mean, Sasquatch season, I mean, they could probably get a hunting permit for that, so.
Here's the fucked up part to think about, though. So when something belongs to a museum, the whole idea is that if it's a public museum, it belongs to the community. So would it even be stealing if you went into the Smithsonian and took this shit if it's stuff that's supposed to belong to the community anyways?
Now, Shane, we all know that's not how the federal government operates.
On paper, that's the way it's said, but it's going to get spun regardless. But technically,
you're just living in fantasy land over there.
The antiquities are supposed to be for the country, for the community. So that being said, it's technically
belongs
to the country.
It belongs in a museum.
Exactly.
That was my Indiana Jones for you guys.
It was a good impression. You're just missing the hat, man. You got to wear your hat when you do the Indiana Jones impression. And with that, if you guys enjoyed this episode, don't forget to leave a review or rating for the show on iTunes or Spotify. 5 stars preferably. And if you guys leave us a 5-star review, we'll read it on the show, give you guys a big shout out. And you can always share the show through word of mouth with a friend. Awesome way to help the show keep organically growing. And with the community growing, that means more encounter stories coming in, other guests coming in, bigger guests possibly coming on the show, more ideas for stuff for us to cover. So just as a whole, man, it's going to benefit the show. It's going to benefit the community. It's going to make it so we can bring more awesome stuff to you guys. So keep organically spreading the show. Push it up in the algorithms. And anything you guys do, we greatly appreciate.
And you guys be sure to contact us through social media. Instagram's where we're most active, but you can also get up with us through email or the submission forms. And be sure to share any fan art or have a conversation, be a guest on our show, invite us to be a guest on your show, sponsor the show, anything like that. Just get up with us. We're easy to find.
And every single link that we've mentioned is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, I have been the one that they call Alamassie Shane.
And I've been Oren.
And guys, I got to tell you every single episode, and I know that you guys dig it out there, because this was actually one of the coolest parts about the show, was that I had our awesome friend, our awesome Norwegian friend, tell me to stay bizarre, which I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So guys.
Catching on.
Exactly. It's catching on. So guys, always, always don't be afraid to stay bizarre. Bizarre. Bizarre.
Quit fucking the lady squatch.